When the pandemic hit, not quite a year ago, cellist Yo-Yo Ma was about to close his office, and he asked his colleagues, "What should we do?" And they decided to start making some videos. They started with Dvorak going home. And then other people started to create videos as well, and they were posting them online. And then he thought, maybe there's more we can do. So he and his friend, Catherine Stott, started to put together a list of songs of comfort and hope. And it turned into a brand new recording. It's the one you're going to be hearing about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Elmacher. I want to start off with your voice. When you were 19 and you were studying with Leonard Rose, he told you that you hadn't found your voice yet. Can you talk about how you found your voice?
I'm still looking. You know, I was studying with Leonard Rose, but the person who told me that was my music teacher. His name was Leon Kirshner. He was a composer, and he just had an extrasensory sense about people and talent. And he was, you know, I think he said it almost off the cuff and said, "No, you haven't found your voice." And I really didn't know what he meant by that, because I didn't know what voice was. You know, I knew I played the cello. I could talk. So what does it mean that you haven't found your voice? And I looked at him sort of like mystified. And then, of course, for years after, we made jokes about that, because he said, you know, "I give you 13 years. And again, out of the blue, because he was very playful in that way. And so after I graduated from college, I would send him postcards from different places that says, you know, "I'm in Berlin. Hi, Leon. I'm still looking for my voice." But part of me took him very seriously and said, well, what exactly did he mean, you know? And so finally, I think the way that I made sense of his comment is that, you know, in a way, yes, we start off already when we're born with, you know, the genetic imprint that's, it's like, you know, the kid, right? You see this two-year-old, you kind of have an idea of what this person is going to grow up to be. But you also have to go through a lot of things. And I think it's the going through a lot of things that didn't make sense to Leon. And I think in that sense, he was totally right. I didn't know who I was. I was just, you know, I was a kid. I knew very little about anything. And now that I'm older, I know even less about everything than I did then, because at least then I thought I knew some things. Whereas now I now know for sure that I don't know so many things. But what I have gained in the interim is experience. And I think, you know, I think there comes a time in our lives where you start to see, you've met so many types of people that you kind of see a certain type of person coming at you, and you can sort of say, "Oh, I recognize this person," you know. And I think it's that kind of experience that I did not have when I was 19. It's the kind of experience that I think after being a parent, after realizing the fragility of life, after you realize that time is finite, that you are not in your 20s and therefore no longer, you know, invincible, that I think 20-year-olds think they're immortal. You realize that you're no longer immortal, and that if you lose time and if you miss your child's first steps, that's forever. You don't regain that. So time then becomes linear. You don't have all the time in the world. It's the kind of experience where you see the Berlin Wall and you see every 50 yards a bouquet of flowers that represents a person who tried crossing and didn't make it. And you realize, wait a minute, that's a different world than the one I came from. And I have to actually find out about that and respect it. You know, it's suddenly your world gets, awareness of the world gets larger, and you find your place within it, and you know, things become more meaningful. I think a lot of things were handed to me that I didn't understand what it was. I remember throwing a score at someone during a rehearsal so that they could read it, and I threw it kind of carelessly, and the conductor next to me just kind of flinched, because for him, a score was something sacred. And, you know, for me to just cavalierly throw it at somebody was just a measure of disrespect. You know, I remember fooling around as a 15-year-old in some music seminar, and the cello teacher kind of walked out because I was just fooling around. I didn't realize that he took his job really seriously and needed a certain respect. And I was having fun, you know? And so it's like those moments. And then when I was 30, I started, the conductor of the Boston Symphony at that time was Seiji Ozawa. And he said, would you go and teach at the Tanglewood Music Center? I said, okay. So I was like 30 years old. And suddenly I was seeing a younger generation, which I'd never had taken into account because I was always the youngest growing up. So suddenly I realized that I had some responsibility to actually get other people really, really excited about music and about getting something for the first time. You know, those things helped me identify what my voice was.
I want to talk about your new recording and the need that it is serving us right now, songs of comfort and hope, and how you kind of started this as part of your mission, which is to, you know, figure out what are the needs of others. I'm going to help be their voice. And you're doing that through music, many pieces of which we recognize. And in fact, yesterday I put this recording on while I was baking, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, I know that one. And I would find myself going back to a place in time where I would remember that piece. And I thought, this is what this album must be about. It's providing us with that safety that we need to feel right now. Can you talk a little bit about this project and how it got started? And then I'd love to talk about a few of the individual pieces too.
Well, I think it just, like a lot of things, they start kind of spontaneously. I mean, I think the very beginning was at the very beginning of the pandemic, you know, we were going to close up the office. And I think we're just asking ourselves, well, what should we do? And one of my colleagues said, well, why don't we do what you've done in the past, which is, you know, if there's an earthquake or a tsunami, you send music to that place. And why don't you do that? And I had my cello there that day and said, okay, good, let's take out our, you know, smartphones and I'll just start playing a couple of pieces. And so that became sort of the zooming thing into hospitals, into, you know, patients' rooms, or into high school graduation where people were missing out on graduation. So how do we, you know, kind of do something that makes up for that great day of liberation, you know? And then in the middle of the summer, I was talking to my really longtime colleague and friend, Kathy Stott. And we've known each other for, I think, 40 years. And we know everybody for 40 years. This is the time in life. It's great. And I would say, well, you know, can we do something that's more than just Zooming? And can we actually pick songs that are meaningful to various people around the world? You know, and Kathy says, absolutely. Let me get onto this and let me think about it. And then she came up with a list, and we both participated in choosing songs. But she did, I think, so much of the work. And we've traveled together all over. But she is even more of an intrepid traveler than I am. And so from the festival that she runs in Australia, she says, you know, Waltzing Matilda, it's a must because every Australian thinks that that's our song. And she found a young composer to arrange it. And for Shenandoah, she said, you know, Caroline Shaw, come on, you know her. It's like, why don't you ask her to do this assessment? Actually, I barely know her. And Kathy asked, and she said, fine, I'll do it. I'm busy, but I'll do it. Part about this album is all the songs that we didn't choose, you know, all the way that we had to kind of give up on and said, this is because we love these songs. We love they're meaningful to many people in specific locations, but they're meaningful to us because sometimes it's the words, you know, sometimes it's you listen to the music and you can't get it out of your head. It's just kind of, you know, play back in your head. And
can you tell me, is there a song like that for you that, you know, a piece that immediately when you think of this recording, you think of that song and you want to tell somebody about it?
You know, it's funny because after we've recorded it, I've actually, there were times I'd say, you know, I want to listen to this song. Like, I needed it. And Kathy and I both are, you know, for Over the Rainbow. When I associate the music with birds fly over the rainbow, why, oh, why can't I? You know, when I associate those words with the music, it's like, you know, it's a puddle. it's just like, you know, and as Kathy says, sometimes it's just a chord. You just hear the chord and then you're in that space.
And in this particular arrangement, you've used pauses so effectively in the last minute or so. Tell me about that. Oh.
Oh. Well, it's the reach, isn't it? You're reaching for something that's kind of almost unreachable. And it's the hope, it's the yearning, it's losing, it's hopefully finding again. And it's all of those complex emotions, like the contradictions of the emotion are built in to the emotion. So the hope is the fear of loss, you know, and the yearning is the knowing it's not reachable. You know, it's both at the same time. You know, in something like We'll Meet Again, same thing was what the War Brides, you know, it's like the when you say goodbye to your mate and say, you know, till we meet again. Yes, often that was not going to be so, right? But
and that seems so poignant right now as we're living in a pandemic. I thought maybe that piece was chosen intentionally as we anticipate meeting one another again, or maybe not.
Yeah. Well, I think it has that sort of double meaning in that we did want to end on a positive note because it is a hopeful thing to meet again. But we know built into that is the possibility.
I want to ask you about Solvig's song, because that's another one that's mournful, delicate, lush. It just seems to run all of the emotions as well. Tell me about that arrangement.
Oh, isn't that so gorgeous? It's, this is a song that I think everyone in Norway knows. I think the words are about, I'm going to wait for you. And then maybe I won't see you. You know, it's like sort of, it's the distance, it's the separation, it is the reaching out, it's so much about inner life, isn't it? It reaches deep inside, and it's very spiritual, I think.
The Pulenk is a piece that when I was listening to it, I thought, I recognize this, but I have no idea what the title of this piece is.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if other people have a similar reaction to it.
It could be, because it's so delightful. You know, it is so, it's waltz-like, and I think it was written for music for play. But Pulenk was such a master of so many different styles, and the fact that, you know, he could write in this style and in such a fun and wistful way. We had to include this because I don't know, I think we fell in love with this piece. But that was not an arrangement. That's pretty much original.
I want to ask you about Tula Baba. This was a new piece for me.
This is a Zulu lullaby, and it's a children's song in South Africa. Now, Kathy teaches in Norway and in Manchester. She lives in England. And so she played it for one of her students from South Africa, and they started crying. Because it said, you know, this is the song of my childhood. This is that, you know, we all sang it. And so again, this, it reaches into the memory banks and you know, creates this kind of nostalgia. You know, the whole point of reaching into people's memory banks, it's sort of like when we need comfort, you know, we look for the touch points in our life, the nearest, dearest, for younger person, it could be your blankie, you know, or, you know, your stuffed animal, or it's your, you know, it's your place of safety and comfort. And what reminds you, maybe it's the baking thing, right? You know, the smell of that pie is something you remember from your grandmother. And it's like, and it's immediate. There's nothing more immediate than the smell of something that's being baked or cooked or roasted or whatever. And it's like, you know, it's that, and early memories are just go into your, like, your limbic system, and it's primal. It is the memories flood back, and we look for things like that in the music.
In putting this recording together, what was most memorable for you?
I think during the whole time, we never lost sight of what people were going through. Because I think everywhere around the world, we're hearing about people who cannot go see their dying relative. They can't. They just, you know, not allowed in. And you see people that, there was one case of a doctor who committed suicide you know, and who just couldn't take it anymore. There was, you know, it's like individual cases matched to the impossible statistics that are almost unfathomable. You know, that I worry that sometimes we are numb to numbers. And it's so horrifying that we could be numb to numbers. But, you know, the way that people get to sort of empathy fatigue, you know, enough horrible things happen. And you said, you know, you feel like you're deadened. And I don't want us to get to that place. I don't want me to be in that place. So, but we never lost sight of this during the whole process of thinking about, would this make a difference? Would this make a difference in that place? And then when we play it, it's a direct line to the very thing that we hope that it would, for the difference that it might make. We're not sure, but we estimate, we hope that for the many different kinds of people with different tastes and whatever, that some of the music will just reach inside and just give a gentle caress. You know, the same thing with having the parts of Amazing Grace on bookends of the album. It's like, because in fact, the composer of Amazing Grace, Newton, was on a ship and that was about to be sunk, and it was in a storm, and he, who was not a God-fearing man, had a transformation. And later on, he became a pastor. He was not necessarily a good person, but he transformed himself into, you know, he was able to remake himself. And Amazing Grace is one of the pieces of music that he wrote. So we wanted to bookend the storm of the pandemic and to really dedicate this music to all the people that have had to go through, you know, the strenuous life, the strenuous times and the stresses and the losses, and to just to acknowledge and maybe say thank you.
Songs of Comfort and Hope with cellist Yo-Yo Ma and pianist Catherine Stott. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Thanks to Valerie Kaler, our producer. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.